Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, November 27th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. District 6 Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston speaks about decision to vote against library bounty bill, counter to Republican Party Central Committee wishes. District 6 Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow speaks about porn. Former Republican Representative Tom Trail of Moscow dies at 88. Gritman Medical Center purchases 409 South Jackson Street in Moscow. And Pullman residents have mixed feelings about Pullman police acquisition of military surplus MRAP vehicle. And you're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho. I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Pew Research Center says data from the U.S. Census Bureau indicates the number of undocumented immigrants living in Washington increased by 60,000 between 2017 and 2021, making Washington one of only two states to have an increase in the number of undocumented people during the period. Florida was the other state with an undocumented immigrant population increase of 80,000. While other states had decreases, only two states had major decreases in undocumented immigrants in that time period. Those were California, down 150,000, and Nevada, down 25,000. According to the Seattle Times, the Pew Research Center report points out the estimates do not take into account a major escalation in arrests and expulsions on the part of federal immigration authorities since 2021. The report says the number of undocumented immigrants in Washington was 300,000 in 2021, which is tied with Massachusetts for the ninth most undocumented immigrants. California has the most with 1.85 million, and Texas has 1.6 million. Florida is third with 900,000. Montana, Wyoming, West Virginia, and Vermont had the least with less than 5,000 each. About 34% of undocumented immigrants in Washington in 2021, about 102,000 people, were from Mexico, more than any other country. District 6 Republican Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston says she represents all 52,000 people in her district and not just a few partisans on central committees. McCann spoke about the sanctions against her for her vote on a library bill from three county central committees in her district at a recent Moscow League of Women Voters forum that also included Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow. Lori McCann, who lives in the small section of Lewiston that is in the 6th Legislative District, won her seat as an incumbent in 2022 against Democrat Patricia Goodhart of Lapway. After being appointed by Governor Brad Little to serve the remainder of the term of Republican Representative Aaron Von Ellinger of Lewiston in the old District 6, after Von Ellinger quit the legislature in 2021 amid rape allegations for which a jury eventually convicted him. Since the far right has taken over most of the Republican Party central committees in Idaho, the Latah County, Nez Perce County, and Lewis County Republican Party central committees have voted to sanction McCann for not being right-wing enough, including her vote against a proposed law that would create a bounty system for parents to sue libraries that provide material to minors deemed harmful. McCann has already drawn a 2024 primary opponent for the seat 6A Republican nomination from the far right. He is 2021 Moscow School Board candidate Colton Bennett. At a forum November 15th at the 1912 Center, the same building where the Latah County Republican Party Central Committee held a meeting to sanction McCann in August, McCann said every library in her district has a process for dealing with books patrons find objectionable on a local level, and it's not the state's role to rule over local authority.
Most of you in here know I got censured by my committees for taking bad votes that they believed were not following the Republican platform. And I've been asked over and over, who is it that you represent? Do you represent the Central Committee, or do you represent the people? And by far, I represent the people. And the platform for me, yes, it is the principles, many of which we all could probably, even if we're not Republican, could probably agree to some. But you know, I look at it as a guideline, something that we can follow. But when they get down in the nitty gritty now to say you will vote for this, this, and this, I have a challenge with that, because that doesn't fit everybody. And I represent over 52,000 people in this district. And as we know, Moscow is got quite a few more liberal thinking than perhaps Craigmont or Popatch. But we have to find that balance and again find the solutions. And so I was very frustrated by all of that this year. And and when I read a bill, I'm reading it from my background of working in the legal field for over 40 years. And so I'm reading for potential problems that could come down the road. And so I look at it and say, I think we're going to really suffer right here. And so I read that, I question that. And so for an example is the library bill. Do I agree that we should be distributing pornography to children? Absolutely not. That is absolutely ridiculous and is not the whole point. The point, though, was for me, is that we have, in our platform says, local control. The closer to the people is the better people to make the decisions. And so for me, I'm saying we have a library board, we have school boards, we have parents who are number one, should be following what their children are reading. Those parents that don't care or don't follow, that this bill wasn't aimed at them. It's really the parents that did follow, and they found some bills, or some books rather, sorry, that they were very uncomfortable with. I wouldn't want my child to read maybe that book either. But that is me as a parent, and that would be my choice or your choice for your children. And I felt very strongly, who am I? I am just a regular person like you, and that is saying to, and then I look at Brandon and say, how dare you allow your child to read such terrible books? Well, that's not my place. And I believe that's the parent's place. And if the parent is upset with the book, I've talked to every single library in our district, and every single library has a policy that to deal with that. And so for me, that's where I had to come down on with that bill, and therefore was censured for my votes. But I'm going to stand strong on that. And I was asked, are you going to change your vote now that you're censured? And I was really offended by that. And I said, if I give up my integrity, what else do I have left? So I said, if I get the very same bill with the very same content to do what those bills were going to do to our librarians, then you're going to get the same vote. So that. Understand that there's a lot more to it than just following somebody's marching orders. Vote and have marching orders.
That was District 6 Representative Lori McCann speaking at a Moscow League of Women Voters 2024 Legislative Session Preview Forum on November 15th. District 6 Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow also participated in the forum. Mitchell has tended to vote with the far right, which has taken over the Idaho Republican Party. He said the constituents that reach out to him have different perspectives than the constituents who reach out to Representative McCann.
What's interesting is to see those that reach out to Representative McCann compared to those that reach out to me. And so we're seeing different things coming across the board. I don't know why that is, but some of the things that we're seeing concerns with is, the library bill's been a big thing they've been talking about. I don't know where that's going to go this year. I know that they are going to bring it back, so we're going to be watching to see what they bring back. It sounds to me like they've put in some different provisions that might be better. I don't know. But some of the things that I'm hearing from some of my constituents, the ones that actually reach out to me, is the pornography that's getting through on cell phones. So there's been a lot of discussion with me about trying to do something like what Utah did. What Utah did is they actually ran a bill to require that you prove your age if you're going to go to a pornographic website. And they based that all off of the IP addresses. And when they did that, Pornhub actually pulled completely out of all of Utah's IP addresses. They don't even try to go anymore. So that's one of the things that I've been hearing from a lot of people. I've been hearing a lot about the library bill. It's still a hot topic that I'm hearing from people.
That was District 6 Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow speaking at a Moscow League of Women Voters Forum November 15th.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Skyglow Solar, offering solar power systems installations on the Palouse and surrounding region. Information at skyglowsolar.com or contact Brian Ogle at 208-310-4555.
Did you notice what's coming up?
Yeah, the holidays. Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and...
No, I mean on Tuesday the 28th.
Oh, you mean Giving Tuesday.
That's right.
I have a feeling you're going to tell me that this is the perfect time to donate to KRFP.
Even better. Donate between now and Tuesday, November 28th, and a generous donor will match your donation.
My whole donation?
The donor will match donations up to a total of $1,000. Can you think of a better, faster way to double your money?
What if I've never donated before?
Send your donation for the match.
What if I already donate?
Send your donation for the match.
How do I donate?
Just go to krfp.org and click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge Grant. You will be able to pay directly through PayPal or mail your check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
So, I go to krfp.org and click the link for the Giving Tuesday Challenge Grant if I want to pay through PayPal. Or, I can mail my check to 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843.
That's right.
So, are you going to donate?
I already have.
You talked me into it.
Former State Representative Tom Trail of Moscow has died at age 88. News reports say Trail died November 2nd. The Republican served in the House representing the old districts 5 and 6 from 1996 to 2012. Trail was known for working both sides of the aisle and served amicably alongside Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo, who represented the same district in the House for most of his tenure. Trail won the support of progressives in Latah County in part because of his work to legalize industrial hemp and his willingness to speak at HempFest. Trail also supported Medicaid expansion, which the legislature for years balked at approving, forcing the voters to take the issue into their own hands and pass a statewide initiative in 2018. Here's Trail speaking to the Moscow League of Women Voters in 2013 after his retirement from the legislature, referencing then-Democratic State Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow, who as a physician was also a strong supporter of Medicaid expansion.
Senator Schmidt and his short little presentation on asking people on the street if they supported Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And it just shows you how ignorant, uneducated the general public is. They didn't have a clue and said, you know, Obamacare is socialistic, but we really like the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, that we have a tradition, a great challenge ahead.
Trail declined to run for re-election in 2012 after 8 terms in the legislature, but ran for Latah County Commissioner that year, losing in the Republican primary to Richard Walzer, who went on to win the general election. Fellow Republican Gary Schroeder of Moscow, who served in the Senate while Trail was in the House, called Trail a dear friend. Schroeder told the Daily News, "What was unique about Tom, he worked readily and willingly with members of both parties to get good legislation passed. Tom was a problem solver, not an ideologue, to support stuff that was ridiculous just because the party said he was supposed to. He thought for himself. What Tom really stood out on was he spent a lot of time doing constituent work and being an interface with the government. Tom was different. He spent a lot of time working with constituents, I did too, on situations that need their attention. Referring to Wayne Hoffman, the executive director of the Idaho Freedom Foundation, Schroeder said the Idaho Republican Party, quote, is a different party now under the influence of Wayne Hoffman. Hoffman really has an effect on a lot of legislators today. They don't represent their constituents. They represent Wayne Hoffman, and all they care about is getting a good rating from him. Later this week, Idaho homeowners will find out how much tax relief they will receive from the new state property tax measure, which shifted $192 million in revenue away from property taxes. Property taxes were a top priority of many in the legislature this year, who were responding to public policy surveys of property owners in recent years. House Bill 292 says the deadline for counties to send their 2023 property tax notices to property owners, either by regular mail or email, was today. Each property tax notice will total the reductions with a label which says, quote, tax relief appropriated by the legislature.
Idaho acted quickly to remove people from Medicaid after special COVID-19 protections expired in April. That included health coverage for tens of thousands of children. In a process called Medicaid Unwinding, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare determined more than 120,000 people were no longer eligible for the program. Hillary Hagen with Idaho Voices for Children says many people were disenrolled from Medicaid for procedural reasons, and the renewal process was unclear.
The confusion around the renewal process often results in families not really finding out that their child has lost Medicaid until they show up at the doctor or when they go to the pharmacy to pick up a potentially life-saving prescription or an asthma inhaler.
During the first 4 months of Medicaid unwinding in Idaho, more than 20,000 children lost health coverage, according to Georgetown University data. Hagen says consistent health coverage is essential for healthy development, especially for young children.
Even a very short lapse in health coverage for children can result in delayed care, unaddressed medical conditions like asthma, and all it takes is one broken arm to put a family with low income in a financial crisis.
Hagen says policymakers should evaluate why so many children were disenrolled from Medicaid during this process.
To see where the opportunities are to make improvements to help make things easy to navigate for families so that children don't lose coverage unnecessarily if they're still eligible or have gaps in coverage.
Open enrollment through Your Health Idaho for health coverage in 2024 is open through December 15th. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Gritman Medical Center has purchased the Thrivent building on South Jackson Street in downtown Moscow from real estate developer Mark Wintz. The nearly block-long building was once home to the Moscow Pullman Daily News and its printing press before the paper moved its offices to the Federal Building, which is also now owned by Gritman. More recently, the building at 409 South Jackson Street was the home of Economic Modeling Specialist International, or EMC, which built and moved into a new four-story headquarters north of downtown and was renamed Lightcast. For a time, a Salvation Army store was located at the north end of the building. Current tenants include Kirker Commons, which is a new St. Andrews College location, the Ellis Eifert Law Firm, and the investment firm Northwest Pinnacle Group. A news release from Gritman says Gritman is honoring all existing leases as part of its Jackson Street purchase agreement. A recent real estate listing showed the asking price for the building was $759,000. Gritman plans to move Gritman Therapy Solutions, currently located at 810 South Main Street, into the Thrivent building and then remodel the current Gritman Therapy Solutions location. Therapy Solutions includes physical, occupational, and speech therapy. Gritman Medical Center spokesperson Brad Gary told the Daily News Moscow's downtown offers easy access to services and is in close proximity to the services provided by our main hospital campus. Besides its 153,000 square foot hospital at South Main and 8th Streets, Gritman owns several other buildings downtown, including the new three-story 57,000 square foot C.L. Gritman Medical Office building on South Main Street across from the hospital, and the 43,000 square foot Gritman Federal Building at 220 East 5th Street, which houses the post office. Citizens of Pullman have responded to a Pullman Police Department Facebook post announcing the acquisition of a large military-style urban rescue vehicle, saying the city should halt the militarization of police. Other comments on the Facebook page were supportive of the police department's acquisition of the vehicle. The urban rescue vehicle came from a Washington Department of Enterprise Services Law Enforcement Support Office program. According to the Enterprise Services website, the U.S. Secretary of Defense administers the program, which permits the state government to send excess Department of Defense property to local law enforcement agencies, as well as federal and state law enforcement. The Pullman Police Department says they have acquired the vehicle free of charge. Pullman Police Operations Commander Aaron Brashears told the Daily News the police department has noticed positive and negative comments from the public and is choosing not to comment at this time. The Max Pro mine-resistant ambush-protected armored vehicle, also called an MRAP, can withstand gunfire and other threats. The Pullman Police News release says the vehicle can be involved in high-risk warrant service, hostage rescue, active shooter incidents, and drone operations. The police department says the vehicle will mostly be assigned to the Whitman County SWAT team. According to the Defense Logistics Agency, since 1990, the federal government has transferred a total of $7.6 billion worth of government property to local law enforcement agencies. With just a few dozen ballots left to count, Pullman City Council member Francis Benjamin had 2,442 votes compared to 2,196 votes for his opponent in the mayor's race, Deborah McNeil. Benjamin will almost assuredly be Pullman's next mayor starting in January. Eric Fajerin has won the at-large city council seat up for election this year, defeating Holly Greystone, 2,247 votes to 1,970. Incumbent Pat Wright has won a Ward 3 city council seat up for election, 626 votes to 447 over challenger C.J. Robert. Incumbent Ann Parks won a Ward 1 council race with 2,194 votes. Dan Marr, whose name appeared on the ballot but who withdrew from the race early, had 505 votes. Whitman County Auditor Sandy Jameson will release the final results in the November 7th election tomorrow at 8 p.m.
A program that gives high school students a taste of college and college credits along the way is celebrating its 33rd year of operation in Washington State. The Running Start program offers 11th and 12th graders an opportunity to take college courses at the state's 34 community and technical colleges and three of its universities. Julie Garver is Director of Policy and Academic Affairs with the Washington State Council of Presidents, which represents universities.
By able to explore those things within high school, which is a safer environment or within those contexts, then students are able not only to get the confidence, but to get those skills so that they are not surprised in learning that transition while they're also taking college courses when they're at one of our campuses.
More than 27,000 high school students were enrolled in Running Start at community and technical colleges in the past academic year. Jamie Traugott directs dual credit and strategic enrollment initiatives for the State Board of Community and Technical Colleges. She says students in the program report feeling better prepared for the next step in their academic careers.
The confidence of being able to complete a college-level class, but then really to be like, okay, I did this. What else can I get involved with? Or maybe I thought I would go to a community technical college, but I never considered that I could also transfer to a four-year institution.
Traugott says the program has been helpful for the students who are able to access it, but there's still more work to do to close equity gaps in enrollment. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Magistrate Judge John Cafferty in Coeur d'Alene has dismissed the misdemeanor conspiracy to riot charge against Patriot Front founder Thomas Rousseau of Texas, but the city prosecuting attorney's office has appealed Judge Cafferty's decision to the First District Court. Coeur d'Alene police arrested Rousseau and 30 other Patriot Front members who were riding in a U-Haul to the Pride in the Park festival in Coeur d'Alene in June 2022. The men from different parts of the country had shields, sharp flagpoles, a smoke grenade, and a written plan to cause a confrontation at the park. The Spokesman Review reports two right-wing agitators that the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee has welcomed to the Panhandle, anti-Semite and Charlottesville Unite the Right neo-Nazi rally participant David Riley and white nationalist instigator and Holocaust denier Vincent James Fox were instrumental in creating an online frenzy over the 2022 Pride in the Park event. The paper reports the frenzy attracted the Patriot Front, which has popped up flash mob style in a number of cities around the U.S. The Huffington Post reported in 2022 the Patriot Front was formed in 2017 out of the remains of Vanguard America, a group that felt they needed to rebrand after Vanguard America member James Alex Field drove his car into a group of anti-fascist protesters during the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, killing one person and injuring 19 others. Multiple photos from that same day showed Field standing along with Vanguard America members wearing the same khakis and white polo shirt outfit and holding a shield with the Vanguard America logo. Since Charlottesville, many of the group's actions involved vandalizing Black Lives Matter banners and other public installations related to the Black Lives Matter movement. Vandals caught on video damaging a George Floyd bust in Brooklyn wore outfits consistent with Patriot Front's standard clothing. They also organized flash mobs to attack public anti-racist demonstrations. Magistrate Cafferty said of his November 3rd ruling dismissing the conspiracy to riot charge against Rousseau, quote, "This will serve the ends of justice and the effective administration of the court's business. This case has languished for well over a year, with some of the delay attributable to both parties. The defense's repeated and timely attempts to gain access to potentially exculpatory information, information the court has repeatedly ruled is material and relevant, has gone without appropriate response by the state." The Coeur d'Alene Prosecuting Attorney's Office has asked the district court to review whether Magistrate Cafferty's decision to dismiss was based on, quote, "clearly erroneous and patently one-sided findings of fact." The prosecutor's office also questioned whether Cafferty's ruling misapplied his analysis of the case Brady v. Maryland, which allowed the dismissal of a case when, quote, "several less drastic and more proportional alternatives were available to address the various issues alleged." So far, of the 31 Patriot Front members Coeur d'Alene police arrested after pulling over the U-Haul on Northwest Boulevard in June 2022, 26 have resolved their cases through plea agreements and convictions in July. Rousseau's case was the second dismissal in the group. Earlier in the year, Magistrate Judge Destry Randles dismissed the case against Patriot Front member Richard Jessup, ruling prosecutors did not properly disclose any evidence that would exonerate the defendant. Judges ordered 18 of those convicted of an amended charge of failure to obtain a parade permit to pay fines of $456 each for their infractions. In two trials this summer, the court convicted seven of the Patriot Front members of conspiracy to riot. The court sentenced the five convicted in the first trial to 3 days in jail, 1 year probation, and $1,000 fines. In the second trial, the court sentenced two Patriot Front members to 2 years probation and $1,000 fines. The cases against Patriot Front arrestees Jared Boyce, Graham Whitson, and Brandon Haney have not been resolved. Fourth District Judge James Cawthon in Ada County has ruled the Idaho Falls School District's $33 million levy to build a new elementary school, which 69.6% of the voters supported this month, is null and void because district trustees ran the election as a levy rather than a bond. The Idaho Education News reports it's becoming more common for school districts in Idaho to finance new buildings with plant facilities levy votes because bonds need a 66.7% supermajority to pass, while levy votes need lower vote percentage thresholds depending on the amount of the levy. District 91 spokesperson Margaret Wimborn wrote in a statement, D91's parents and patrons clearly supported this levy as a way to address the district's ongoing facilities issues. It's frustrating that the directive of our local taxpayers has been challenged by the Idaho Tax Commission and dismissed by the courts. The Board of Trustees is committed to addressing its critical facilities issues and ensuring that every student in Idaho Falls School District 91 can learn in an environment that is safe and meets their needs. The Idaho State Tax Commission filed their objection to the Idaho Falls levy because Idaho law says only one levy can be on the books at any given time in a school district. Attorneys for the Idaho Falls School District trustees said both the district's current levy, which expires in 2032, and the new levy voters passed this month are legal because they meet two requirements for levies written into Idaho law. Those are they do not exceed 0.4% of the district's market value, and they do not exceed 10 years. Judge Cawthon disagreed. The Idaho Falls trustees want a new elementary school in their district to alleviate overcrowding. The plant facilities vote this month was a more modest proposal than the $250 million bond Idaho Falls trustees put before voters in November 2022, which got 58% yes votes but failed because of the Idaho law requiring a two-thirds supermajority for bonds. Bonneville County Prosecutor Randy Neal told the Idaho Education News the trustees could run the levy as a bond at the next opportunity. That next opportunity would be May because the legislature this year eliminated all March election dates from the state elections calendar. With voters supporting the $33 million levy by nearly 70% this month, it's likely it will pass. Neal also said the district could amend the original plant facilities levy, which will be in effect for another 8 years. The original $33 million levy was for 10 years, which means trustees would have to ask for more money each year from property owners to fund the elementary school. Another drawback is plant facilities levies do not qualify for state financial assistance under the Bond and Levy Equalization Program. The levy vote would require a lower threshold of yes votes than a bond.
Montana high schools and colleges are working together to build a pipeline of homegrown teaching talent for the state's K-12 classrooms. For various reasons, not least of which is the pay, the teaching profession has lost some of its luster for college graduates exploring their career options. Becky Frisbee with Great Falls Public Schools says Montana is feeling the effect of that too, following the national trend.
There just is a shortage of teachers, and we've got to find new and creative ways to help students into that education field so that we can start getting students back into this pathway of becoming teachers.
So in cooperation with local colleges, Montana's Pathways to Teaching program allows high school students who study education to earn college credit so they can graduate sooner, save money on college, and decide if education is the right career choice for them. Frisbee says the program's like creating mini apprenticeships for students who can decide before making a full commitment if teaching is something they want to do with their lives. Frisbee says the Pathways to Teaching program also requires students to spend time observing in elementary school classrooms, which helps them decide which route they want to take.
Maybe they want to be in education, but they're not ready to be a classroom teacher. Maybe they want to support in a different way. Maybe they want to go into law and be the school lawyer, or they're going to go into business and they're going to work in the business department at the district level.
Frisbee says the most important part of the program is filling that teaching pipeline with homegrown talent, keeping students and teachers in Montana. Support for this story comes from Lumina Foundation, and original reporting was done by Victoria Lim for Working Nation. For Big Sky Connection, I'm Mark Moran.
U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy in Missoula placed limits on Montana's wolf trapping season last week, citing potential threats to grizzly bears getting caught in wolf traps or snares. Malloy set the new wolf trapping season for January 1st to February 15th in the north-central section of the state near the Canadian border. Malloy granted the preliminary injunction following arguments from the plaintiffs, the Flathead Lolo Bitterroot Citizens Task Force and Wild Earth Guardians, and state defense attorneys representing the defendants, the state of Montana, Governor Greg Gianforte, and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Commission Chair Leslie Robinson. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Judge Malloy said at last week's hearing he agreed with most of the arguments raised by the plaintiffs, especially on the traps which could injure grizzly bears. He said that a trapped bear will be considered an illegal take under the Endangered Species Act, and the 6-week limit is an appropriate time frame for trapping to be allowed. Malloy left coyote trapping out of his order, which means coyote trapping is permitted year-round. In the order, Malloy wrote, "Because the substantial body of evidence plaintiffs present leads to the logical conclusion that future takes of grizzly bears in legal wolf and coyote traps are reasonably certain under the state's current regulatory scheme, plaintiffs have shown irreparable harm sufficient for preliminary injunction." Prior to Malloy's ruling, the Montana wolf trapping and snaring could have started as early as today and run through March 15th. Wildlife officials typically consider season starting dates based on how many grizzlies are not yet in their winter dens and can start the season as late as December 31st. Malloy said at various times in his order the plaintiff's arguments were valid and he was not swayed or persuaded by the state's arguments. Malloy cited the serious concerns raised by the plaintiffs on the threats to grizzlies, who said the harm was, quote, not only possible but likely. Judge Malloy also addressed the plaintiff's point that the state's 2023 regulations, which include baiting wolves in a longer season than in previous years, along with increased individual quotas, will, quote, only increase the likelihood that grizzly bears are subject to illegal takes in the future. Wild Earth Guardians Carnivore Coexistence attorney Lizzie Pennock said, "We are elated that Montana's grizzly bears will at least temporarily avoid the cruel harms caused by indiscriminate steel traps and snares in their habitat. We are pleased that the court saw the dangers of allowing these activities to continue, and we are optimistic that this win is a precursor to securing longer-term grizzly protections." Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks attorney Sarah Klerger has already filed a notice to appeal with the court, and a spokesperson for the governor's office says the Gianforte administration is reviewing the decision. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear through Wednesday with a low of 22 tonight, highs 39 tomorrow and 36 Wednesday, low 21 Tuesday night, current temperature 28. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, Be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Flashpoints is next, and music begins at 7:30 with Zachar Dunoir.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram. KRFP programming is also sponsored by
Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine, such as Euros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh. Located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.